You're listening to the Something Beautiful podcast. I'm Jonathan Blundell. Thanks for listening to the Something Beautiful podcast. This week, our guest is Joshua Becker. He is a minimalist, and he blogs about that journey at becomingminimalist.com. He's also written several books about the journey. And as you may know, our show loves to break down stereotypes. And Joshua is a great example of someone who's breaking down the stereotypes of minimalism. Take a listen.
I want to find a lot of freedom in my definition of minimalism. I think the things that turn people off are when they think that there's this rigidity to it, that I can only own a certain number of things, that I can't have artwork on my walls, that my cupboards have to be bare. I've never been attracted to that idea of minimalism. What I've always been attracted to is living my life with purpose and living my life intentionally and trying to live the best one that I can. And I've just come to realize that so much of the stuff that we own isn't contributing to a purposeful life, but is actually distracting us from it. And so my goal of minimalism then is keep the things that I need to accomplish what I want to accomplish, and then get rid of the excess so I'm able to do what it is that I want to do. I wrote a column one time on consumerism and why we need to overcome excessive consumerism. And as I was setting the table for the post, I said, hey, we're consumers just because we're people. I mean, to live is to consume. And I define myself as a minimalist, but you can look around my house and there's a couch and two chairs in the living room. We have a television in our house. There's plates and there's cups and there's frying pans and frying pan. And there's a dining room table with 8 chairs. And there's 3 beds and there's 3 dressers and there's towels and there's bedding. And I just listed all the things that we had. And I said, we own these things because we're living and because we need these things. What we want to avoid is the excessive. I don't have a closet full of bedding. I don't have, you know, dozens of towels piled up. We have 8 plates and we have 8 glasses and we have, I think there's 12 forks, you know, but it's not an overflowing type lifestyle. And so someone commented, or actually wrote a response to it, and they made some comment about how I didn't seem very minimalist at all. and I remember thinking, you know, if someone walked into my house, they probably wouldn't quickly say, oh, you must be a minimalist, you don't own anything. I think they would just walk in and think, oh, this house seems pretty tidy. This house seems pretty clean. Maybe after about the second or third time, they would start noticing, hey, you don't have anything on your counters, or, you know, the house is pretty simple. You know, after a while, I think they would start to notice that. So I think that our house is probably like a pretty typical American house. It's got a lot of the same things in it, just less of them.
Now, from the first time I started reading Josh's blog and reading his books, I immediately appreciated this mindset about him. He always talks about minimalism as a journey, and a journey that will look different for everyone. He talks about it being an intentional way of living, focused on the things that matter most to us, quality over quantity. And that's what a lot of his writing, including his new book, Clutter Free with Kids, focuses on. Now, if you're reading the book, you may find that you can easily replace the words clutter free with minimalism and vice versa. So I asked Josh, is this just an attempt to tackle minimalism with a different angle?
I think clutter free and minimalism OMD mean different things. I think generally speaking, clutter-free is a very attractive word to people. You mention it to parents, you know, clutter-free with kids, and eyes light up, and they can't wait to read the book, and they can't wait to read it because it's a very felt need in parents' lives, where they know what their kids' bedrooms look like, they know what their living rooms look like, and this sea of clutter that they live in, and they're looking for relief. They're looking for relief from it. And so I would never say that clutter-free with kids was just a front for me to make the case for minimalism, but I think much of the reason that parents are frustrated and overwhelmed with the clutter in their home is because they have bought into this consumerism mindset. And the antidote for that is intentionality. It is minimalism in a lot of ways. And so the two walk hand in hand for me when I wrote the book. It is a book that centers on removing clutter, and it goes through specific areas where clutter tends to pile up in around kids. But it's really a conversation about more than that. I mean, it's a conversation about minimalism and about overcoming consumerism.
So if you're like me with kids and you're thinking there is too much clutter around my house, there are too many toys everywhere, the kids just make a mess. Let's just kind of ignore my mess. But if you're thinking that, of course, your instant thought is, how in the world do I get my kids involved in living a clutter-free lifestyle?
When I tell people to start easy, I legitimately say you can probably walk through your house and find 10, 15, 20% of things that you really don't even want in your house anymore. like start there. And you can begin purging even more after that, but start with a very low-hanging fruit. And so literally our first question with Salem,
that's Joshua's son who was 5 at the time,
was, which toys do you not play with anymore, and which toys are you okay with us getting rid of? And he made a pile, and it wasn't all that difficult for him. There was, you know, a number of toys that are broken, you know, that we just hadn't gotten rid of. And so he picked out all the broken toys, and there's a bunch of junky little Happy Meal toys at the bottom of his bin that he didn't use anymore. And then some other things that, you know, he was ready to get rid of that he had played with and didn't play with anymore. So in that way, we found it was much easier than we had expected it to be.
But not every kid is that easy.
You know, my daughter now, it's a challenge to get rid of anything. just in general, she's able to get rid of clothes that she doesn't wear anymore, obviously, but her toys are difficult. And so she's got a section of stuffed animals. We try to keep all of her toys in the closet, and once it overflows from the closet, then she knows that we're going to be going through them sooner or later. And that happens after holidays and after birthdays. Sometimes it just happens as things begin to accumulate, and it can be difficult. My wife is the one that usually does it with her. Just challenging her on some things. Do you really play with this anymore? Do you really need to keep that anymore? You have this instead. So anything and everything with her tends to be pretty difficult. And so for her, you know, it works best to do it. I think for her, it works best to do it in a big chunk at a time. You know, when she's been prepared for it. You know, hey, we're going to go through your room pretty soon. Hey, we got to get rid of some of your toys pretty soon. Kind of bracing her for that. And then as opposed to, you know, ripping something off, you know, once a week, making her give something, just making a big, you know, a big splash and pulling things out and making them fit back in the closet or overflowing a little bit.
One of the things that Joshua and many minimalists talk about is setting boundaries. Figure out where your priorities lie and then set boundaries around them, and then let those be your guide in decisions.
Setting boundaries forces decisions between what we really love and what we just kind of love. Because I think a lot of these things get held on to because we kind of like them. But when you're forced to identify, let's say your son has 15 stuffed animals on his bed, and you're able to say, okay, you can keep 12 of them. I mean, make it easy. Which three are you going to get rid of? They can usually pick them out pretty quickly, and they can come up with the three. So my daughter has her, I mentioned her closet, one half of her closet, and there's a brown, like a baby cradle on one side of it. And so we say, hey, your stuffed animals need to stay in this little cradle. And once they start overflowing, then you got to pull out a few. And she's able to do it, because when you force the boundaries, then I think it forces those decisions a little bit better.
One of the points that Joshua makes in his book is that with all the Christmases and birthdays and other events that we had growing up where gifts were a big part of the event, neither of us can really remember many gifts that we received growing up. Now, that's not to say that our parents or family members were bad gift givers. It's just that there were so many other things that memory-wise were much more valuable to us.
You know, our kids just want time with us. You know, our kids need us to discipline them. You know, they need us to lead by example. I think more than anything, they just need us to be selfless parents. I was asked recently if you know, becoming clutter-free with kids is difficult for parents and how kids respond to it. And I said, man, if you haven't laid the groundwork of just showing that you love your kids and that you have their best in mind with the decisions that you make, if you have a habit of being very selfish and self-centered and focused on you rather than focused on what's best for your kids, then making this decision to go clutter-free or go minimalist is going to be very difficult for them, because they're going to think it's just a self-serving action. But if they've seen over and over again that you're doing what you think is best for them legitimately, then this is going to be a much easier conversation, and they're going to be more willing to accept it. One of the best benefits I think of living minimalist and removing consumerism is this: that we set a far better example for our kids, and we show them that they don't have to buy more things to be happy. Show them that we can be content with what we have. And I think that those are all really important gifts that we need to be giving to our kids. And man, one of the hopes with the book was just that we would have better parents because of it. That as parents removed consumerism from their lives, that they would be able to focus on some of these better things, that they become more intentional and more strategic because they have the time and they have the energy to do it. That was, I mean, one of the hopes of writing this book. If I had to, you know, paint it with some broad strokes, you know, if we can get some better parents and get some better kids, then all be it.
Joshua makes the point in his book that really we're already living a minimalist life to some extent. We're already making decisions to cut things out of our lives. We have finite resources, whether it's minutes, dollars, or units of energy. It's a finite resource, and we have to decide where we're going to spend those resources. So we're already making decisions of what we're going to cut out of our lives. The question is, can we trade up? Can we cut some things out that don't really matter, cut those things out that we don't really love, and trade up for the things that really matter and that we really do love and really do value?
Yeah, it really became my whole foundation for pursuing minimalism was just as I began to understand how all the things that we own take away a little bit of life from us. You know, the easy illustration is just how much time we spend cleaning all the stuff that we have, cleaning and organizing and maintaining and repairing and replacing and throwing away. And that doesn't even begin to talk about all the time we spend working on the front end just to earn the money to go shopping and buy the things to bring home to clean and organize and manage. And we were, just by definition, we live these finite lives. We have the same amount of, you know, hours in a day, and you know, there may be someone with infinite money, but there aren't very many. You know, most of us have a set amount that we have to deal with, and every bit of time and energy and money that we spend on buying things and owning things is less time and money and energy that we have for pursuing the most significant things, the more important things in life, the parenting our children well. And so I want to encourage parents to think through, what is the trade-off that they're making with their lives? What are they trading their lives for? Because we're all trading them for something. And I think that we need to trade for the most important things. And certainly those aren't things that we're buying at the store.
Thanks again to Joshua Becker for chatting with us this week. He blogs at becomingminimalist.com, and you can find links to his blog as well as his latest book on our website at somethingbeautifulpodcast.com. We'll also have links to our first interview with Joshua, where you'll hear more of his story and find out how he decided to actually become a minimalist. And yes, before you do ask, he does see the irony in a guy talking about minimalism and asking you to buy his books. He gets it. Our theme song is "Al Named Orion" by danosongs.com, and you can find links to the rest of our music on our website at somethingbeautifulpodcast.com. And if you like what you hear in our podcast, be sure to subscribe and give us a 5-star rating on iTunes, and then tell a friend. Let them know what you're listening to, let them know that you like the podcast, and ask them to subscribe as well. We hope to be back again before the end of the month with a new story to share, and hopefully by then this head cold will have moved on. Before we sit down to record that episode, oh, we can only hope. Either way, thanks for listening to the Something Beautiful podcast. I'm Jonathan Blundell. Have a great week.